Welcome to Infinite Future. I'm Todd Thomas, and today we're exploring the innovations shaping tomorrow's world. You're watching Now Media TV. Welcome to Infinite Future, where we take the big breakthroughs shaping the next decade and make them feel immediate, real, and actionable. I'm Todd Thomas. Today I'm sitting down with Dr. Alan Badeau. Dr. Badeau is a generative AI evangelist and an award-winning technology leader whose work spans federal, commercial, and frontier innovation. He's the founder of Harmonic AI and now the chief AI officer at DigitalNet.ai. He focuses on something most companies say they want but rarely engineer: decision advantage, the ability to make better calls faster under uncertainty. Welcome to the show, Dr. Badeau.
Thanks, Todd. It's great to be here.
Now, another little sidelight. This is, a personal compliment from me. My very first appearance on Now Media TV was on your show, AI Today. So thank you very much for having me on your show. It's a pleasure to now have you be my first guest on this new show. So thanks so much for joining us.
I appreciate it very much. It's great to get to chat with you again.
So today we're going to talk about AI strategy. Most organizations think AI strategy means tools, models, and dashboards. I want to challenge that. If the real advantage is decision quality and decision speed, then the question becomes, what decisions matter most? What signals are trusted? And where should AI touch the wheel and where should it not touch the wheel? So when leaders tell me we need an AI strategy, what they often mean is we need faster answers. What's the difference between answers and decision advantage in the real world?
Yeah, so I see the same thing that you see all the time. And, you know, as leaders are, you know, either trying to catch up or they're trying to do something with their strategy, it's always about trying to look at perspective, right? And trying to get the best answer that you can. If you surround yourself with 6-7 people and you get their perspective, that's great. But a decision advantage is being able to look at 10 times, 100 times, even 1,000 times, you know, what you can surround yourself with and take all that information, put it in an easy to, you know, to communicate form and leverage that to help, you know, really guide the decisions that you're making. And it can be strategy, it can be operational, it can be, you know, R&D. There's a lot of ways that you can do that, though.
So we hear a lot about AI projects that are failing, that companies are putting a lot of money investing into AI projects and they're not working for them. What's a decision category that you see where AI routinely makes companies worse because it accelerates bad incentives, bad data, or bad definitions of success?
Well, you know, I've talked about this recently too, and you know, healthcare, that's an easy example. And you know, the challenge with the healthcare space is really around, you know, of course you've got the ethics piece, but then you also have the other nuances associated with how are doctors using it to gain a decision advantage? How are nurses and your treatments gaining that advantage? And, you know, that's one of the real up and coming areas where the medical professionals can use AI to, you know, either correlate different types of health data or, you know, really work through some of the symptoms and try to get to the best treatment program. Those are two big areas.
Excellent. Here's a question for you. If I gave you 90 days inside of a growth stage company, what are the first three decisions you'd instrument end to end? Signals, thresholds, accountability, feedback loops, and why those three?
So the biggest, when you look at thresholds, you look at the data, you know, it all is going to come down to really traceability and really auditability, right? Because we want to make sure that the AI is making the right decision using the right processes and using the right information. You know, oftentimes we see AI will give you an answer, you have no idea where that answer came from. You have no idea the nuances associated with that other than it just got the answer right. From a traceability perspective, you can see every step of the way. You can see all of the data that is used. You can see all the processes that it's used. And, you know, when it comes to its conclusion, it's going to, you know, it's going to give you a confidence that is really, you know, the driving factor on whether or not you're going to accept that decision or not. Because if you don't have confidence in the AI, then you're likely just going to throw that that decision away. So those are really the big, you know, drivers around whether a human is going to accept that decision or not.
Where do you see the human aspect coming into that? At what stage does the human need to be involved to validate or approve those decisions?
Well, it sort of depends on what stage they are in their acceptance, how familiar they are with the AI that they're using. You know, oftentimes we'll see that, you know, leaders will, you know, executives and the leader, their leadership team will wait until everything else is done and then they'll get involved. That's definitely way too late. On the flip side, sometimes they want to micromanage. They want to see everything that it's doing because they don't have a lot of faith or confidence in you know, just AI in general. And so they really want to feel good about it. And so they're getting involved so early in the process that, you know, they don't allow their team to fail every once in a while. And it causes, you know, havoc on really the environment. So really that right balance is, you know, making sure that the executives are driving the projects, they own that, they've got the coverage, they're providing the coverage that their team needs. But then as their team starts to bring them information and performance, you know, it's working in one area but not quite working in another, their ability to give that guidance is going to be important and help steer to make sure the team stays, you know, on track. But you don't want to micromanage your team just from the perspective of, oh, we've got to get this pilot done, and if we don't get this pilot done, it's a failure. They're not thinking strategic enough, and that often is really going to be the death nail in you know, really that corporate AI embracement and culture, because it stresses the whole ecosphere, and you know, everybody just, if it fails, then forget about it. They're not going to accept it.
Can you give an example that you like of a company that really did it well, found the right balance, really drove better decisions faster, a company that really created decision advantage?
Well, I would say, and I don't mind saying their name either, you know, American Express, they were some of the early embracement, you know, they embraced AI very early on. They had used it from a fraud perspective. They were trying to leverage it for customer relationships and some of those other things just so they could, you know, get information to their call center folks faster. They did it the right way. They went through a process. They stuck with the process. They followed through on what they said they were going to deliver. They got their teams involved very early on. I would say that they would be the beacon for what a lot of companies should look at when you want to actually launch something and drive it from nothing to, you know, really using it almost everywhere. That would be them.
Fantastic. That's a great example. I think that's a great place to wrap up our first segment. I'm Todd Thomas, and you're watching Infinite Future. Today we have Dr. Alan Badeau, who's given us his insights into AI and how to really drive decision advantage. Coming up in our next segment, we're going to push into what you're building with Harmonic AI and why AI as a trusted advisor is a totally different interface layer than the world is expecting. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. We'll be right back with more conversations at the edge of technology and transformation. Stay tuned. Every week on Infinite Future, we explore breakthrough innovation across every major frontier. We talk to AI architects, biotech pioneers, space entrepreneurs, clean energy disruptors, and the thinkers redesigning global systems. We don't just talk trends. We examine scalability, ethics, economic impact, and real-world implementation. If you're building, investing in, or leading the future, join me on Infinite Future, only on Now Media TV. Because the future isn't predicted, it's engineered. And we're back. I'm Todd Thomas, and this is Infinite Future on Now Media TV. Let's look ahead. Welcome back to Infinite Future. I'm Todd Thomas. Stay connected to this show and all of your Now Media TV favorites live or on demand anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. Are you on the move? Do you prefer podcasts? Catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. So welcome back to the show. In this segment, I want to separate two things the world keeps blending together, conversation and cognition, because the next leap isn't just talking to AI, it's building AI that can partner with human judgment in high-stakes environments. Harmonic AI positions its platform around AI personas that model human judgment, risk tolerance, calibration, and motivational priorities, trust building, cultural alignment, and scenario projections. That's a radically different claim than we built a chatbot. When you say human AI synergy, what's the specific division of labor? What do I keep human? What do I delegate to the system? And what do I require as the two key decision?
Yeah, so I think from our perspective, it's always going to be about keeping a human in the loop. That's just as fundamental to how we look at things. It doesn't matter what sort of decision it is. If a human isn't the one making that final decision, then, you know, there are some challenges and some potential pitfalls with that. But from our perspective, you know, we want to redefine how AI is used by humans. You know, oftentimes you go in and it continues to be treated as software. It's not software anymore. It's not Excel. It's not, you know, Outlook. It's something that you are relying on to provide you information that you're going to use to make a decision. And so if you don't have trust in it, if you don't have some sort of, you know, understanding of how these things are built, how they are going to be used, then your confidence level is really not as high as it should be. And so your decisions that you're making are either going to be forced, they're going to be challenged, or in some cases, they're just going to be wrong because you listen to a large language model. And so the way that we're building things, it's not a wrapper around a large language model. We're taking decision algorithms. We're taking genetic algorithms. We're taking behavioral modeling. We've come up with a lot of different proprietary capability that allow us to put all of those together, including other technologies like quantum and neuromorphics and those kind of things. And those are the driving forces behind our answers and the decisions that it is coming up with. The large language models, all they do is carry the message for us. And so that's a very different type of model than what most people are used to seeing.
So as human beings start interacting with your platform, people are used to Excel and Outlook and all of these tools that are really just reactive. We ask it to do something or we define something specific. What you're describing is really an interactive decision partner. How much training is required to get humans to really learn to get full benefit out of your platform?
Well, I would say there's training on both ends. That's the human that has to be trained as well as the AI, because how you ask our AI questions and how you approach it, you know, and in the really the mechanism at how you traditionally learn is going to be learned and understood by our AI, by our cognitive agents. They are trying to learn what your behavior is, and they'll take that behavior and then they will shape their messages, they'll shape their answers, they'll shape the material that they put in front of you based on their understanding of how you learn best and how your actions are. And so that dynamic goes back and forth. It does take a little bit of time for us to train our agents, usually between 2 and 3 days. It's not a huge effort that we have to go through, but you know, that's pretty standard. But it actually takes the human longer to understand how they're going to ask it questions, how they're gonna really deep dive into things, how they're gonna follow up with some of those answers. And then, you know, that's what facilitates a great relationship, and that's what facilitates their ability to do way more than they can by using just a normal large language model.
Yeah, I think when we talk to different leaders about using AI really as a force multiplier, this is kind of exactly what we're talking about here, right? You take your traditional work staff, and you're really giving them a tool that, you know, dramatically increases their productivity. So instead of, the big question is always, oh no, AI is going to replace jobs. Well, it doesn't have to. What it can do is really be that force multiplier, and allow your existing staff to do substantially more, better work. So that's really what we're talking about here. But clearly, yes, the AI needs to be trained, but there's significant training that has to happen on the human side as well. I mean, I think that's a part that people miss a lot.
Yeah, and I think some folks have seen from a prompting perspective, they've seen as those models have progressed, their old prompts don't work the same as the new ones. So from our perspective, when you start looking at it from a cognitive ability, and you have changed your mentality in that you are looking at it from, I'm going to give the AI this kind of work, they're going to bring me back an answer to that work, and now I can look at it from a whole bunch of different ways, and I can then put my feelings, my expertise on top of that. That's where you start to see that exponential growth in what a capability is, as opposed to just, oh, here's an answer, and then I'm gonna have to spend 2 weeks trying to figure out if the AI was right, and then I'll make an answer. We don't think that's the best way to go.
Ah, excellent. Your platform talks about modeling judgment traits like risk tolerance and trust building. What's the measurable output? How do I prove the persona is improving decisions, not just sounding persuasive?
Yeah, that is really important, because we quantify all of that information. So that we take our decision models, our risk models, our behavioral models, all of those are quantifiable. And so if you ask our models, what bias do you have from a calculation perspective, it will give you a number. It will give you, am biased at 58% for X, or my risk score is 62 out of 100, or something like that, that allows you to get an understanding of what they're thinking, what their scores are, how do I quantify that. It's all about traceability and transparency. Every model that we are putting into our decisions, every model that is going into the behaviors, is all quantifiable and it's all transparent. And that is, that's the only way that a user can feel good and comfortable about really having, an assistant that they're going to rely on. And we saw that very early on that, just because the large language model got something right, there was some issues with that, and a lot of folks started to walk away from it, and they started to use it like Google again, like we've talked about before. Ours behave differently, they interact differently, and the results and how they present those results are just different than what everybody else is doing.
So let's get real concrete here. If I'm a founder and I'm scaling fast, what's one decision workflow where a cognitive persona beats a generic LLM assistant? Because if I understand context, trade-offs, and priorities.
So the good thing is, if you are looking for experts, then that's where our cognitive agents would really be able to shine. Because they're very specific, they provide discrete answers, they can allow you to drill down. And so if you really have situational awareness type activities, if you have things that you're trying to figure out on the edge, and maybe it's a force deployment, maybe it's a sensor that has gone out, and you're trying to figure out and use the AI to figure out what, how to fix those things. That's where our AI would really shine. If it's a general question, meaning that, You know, what's the ITIL processes for, you know, for a service desk? The large language model is going to be able to get that just as easy as our models, and they're going to be able to do it just as fast as our models. And so we tell people, if that's the kind of thing that you're looking for, it's okay to use a large language model to do that. Our personas and our agents are subject matter experts. And so we're telling folks, and we can show them, you know, for anything that's proprietary, for anything that you need a discrete answer for, we bring up any of the large language models, we bring up our agents, ask it questions in front of them, and then they can see what the difference is, because there is a significant difference in the quality of the answers that ours will provide.
Excellent. What's your method for preventing trusted advisor drift, where the AI starts nudging outcomes based on training priors instead of my current intent, values, or real constraints?
That is a big thing that we watch out for. Our agents, the way that they're built and how we are ensembling a lot of different AI technologies, including in some cases large language models. I don't want to say that, you know, we don't use them at all for anything, but you know, we are monitoring that just like we are, you know, the health of an IT or the health of a system, the health of a server. We're monitoring drift the exact same way, because otherwise, as you know, as you are interacting with our agents, you're going to see that their personalities are also going to change a little bit. And we have to make sure that those personalities are changing based on how you're communicating with it versus it's going off the rails a little bit because it did something. And when ours hit about 2%, that's when we really will dig in. We'll work with the user and we'll say, okay, you know, what are some of the questions? What are some of the interactions? We have a baseline testing suite that we will allow them to use to make sure that the AI is still on point. But that's our methodology right there. And by doing that, you know, we haven't seen more than a 3.5% drift in almost 9 months in some of our agents that we've deployed.
Wow, fantastic. So, Dr. Badeau, for leaders who want to see your work and follow what you're building, where can they find you?
Well, the easiest way to find me is on my LinkedIn account, and I'm very active on LinkedIn. As you are aware, I get a lot of emails via the TV show, and you're going to get a lot of emails as well. And so I love those, though, because they really let me set the tone. They let me answer a lot of questions that the viewers have. And, you know, my interaction with those, I just enjoy that so much. So they can also send me an email, and I'll respond to it.
Fantastic. In our next segment, I want to go higher stakes, operational tempo, uncertainty, and what decision advantage looks like when you don't get unlimited retries. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Dr. Alan Badeau. We'll be right back with more conversations at the edge of technology and transformation. Stay tuned. Every week on Infinite Future, we explore breakthrough innovation across every major frontier. We talk to AI architects, biotech pioneers, space entrepreneurs, clean energy disruptors, and the thinkers redesigning global systems. We don't just talk trends. We examine scalability, ethics, economic impact, and real-world implementation. If you're building, investing in, or leading the future, join me on Infinite Future, only on Now Media TV. Because the future isn't predicted, it's engineered. And we're back. I'm Todd Thomas, and this is Infinite Future on Now Media TV. Let's look ahead. Welcome back to Infinite Future. I'm Todd Thomas. So far, we've talked about AI as a decision engine and AI as a trusted advisor. Now I want to go into the environments where mistakes are expensive and time is compressed, where you don't get to pilot forever and you can't confuse confidence with correctness. This is where decision systems either create advantage or create amplified failure. I want to frame this around tempo. How quickly an organization senses change, updates belief, and commits action without breaking trust or safety. So, Dr. Badeau, in high stakes settings, what's your standard for letting AI influence an operational decision? What evidence do you require beyond the model performs well in these tests?
Well, that's a great question. And that's what usually keeps me up at night are those sort of environments. And it's really whether or not, you know, it can be a military situation. It can be, you know, an operational production facility. It can be a drug manufacturing facility. You know, those are the environments where I try to, you know, people get excited when they see early results, right? And they want to deploy immediately. We pull back. You know, I have faith that our agents are going to work. I know that they're going to get there from a decision perspective. But even after we deploy them, we don't turn them loose for at least a few months. And one, you know, it's about building that relationship with the human. But then also, it's about making sure that it's the right tone. It's the right, you know, research that our agents are putting into it. It's the right process, and it becomes consistent, and it becomes, you know, as repeatable as we can make it, so that we have a high confidence that in those types of environments, it's not going to fail. And, you know, we see, you know, quite honestly, we see a hallucination maybe once every 35,000 to 50,000 responses. And in some cases, that's not good enough. And, you know, we our goal is to get to one in 250,000, because that's when we'll have ultimate confidence in our agent's ability to do those sort of things. But for now, those are the diagnostics that we're looking at. We're looking at, is it repeatable? Has it drifted? Has it hallucinated? Is the bias exactly what we want the bias to be at? You know, it's those parameters that we're always monitoring to make sure that they are behaving, that they're giving the right answer, and that they're interacting the right way.
So you've talked a couple of times about the AI agent really kind of learning their human, right? And the human learning how to interact with the agent as well. Is it possible for you to use AI agents that are very successful for you to do some of the pre-training, or is it really more about the specific AI agent getting to a really strong relationship with their human?
In our case, it's really about that relationship with the human, because everybody's dynamic, their relationship is really unique. And, you know, even when you have, you know, a company, we'll say, you know, let's pick on a bank. You have one bank that does it one way and interacts with their users potentially, you know, one way. A separate bank that is interacting with users one way and doing the exact same thing, but those human interactions are completely different. Even if you take our agents and put them over in the other bank, we're not going to use the pre-trained agents or that historical information from the other bank, because that doesn't help us. It doesn't help that influence that human relationship that we're driving to. And so, depending on the environment, of course, but, you know, for basic situations, they start from scratch. They have a fundamental training and a baseline of capabilities that they have specific to that job that they're trying to solve. And then they go from there from a relationship perspective, because, you know, as well as I do, relationships are the hardest thing to develop, even among humans. And, you know, we make our agents go through a very similar process as if you're onboarding a new employee or you're onboarding, you know, a new you know, consultant or those sort of things, because that's what is going to drive that dynamic.
Excellent. Very helpful. What does bad tempo look like in the commercial world? Where do companies lose speed? Sensing, deciding, executing, or learning?
Well, I would say all of the above. I've seen it, all of the above, and the worst ones do every one of them. You know, it's so there's a lot of pressure on these companies to try to say that they're doing AI somewhere. And when you start to peel the onion back, the ones that are unsuccessful are doing it just because they want to say that they're doing AI. It's nowhere in their strategic plan. They haven't thought about it. And so all they're doing is launching something, putting it out there, and it doesn't work, or it does work, and they have no idea how they're going to scale it. They have no idea what they're going to do with it afterwards. And so those are some of the dynamics that we see. Where I see a lot of companies really go wrong is that they think that they can just turn everything over to the poor CTO because he has an IT degree and he's got an engineering degree or whatever that is. And they say, go build us an AI program. And that is so unfair for chief technology officers, because then again, you're treating it like you're deploying a piece of software, and you're not. You have to think about insider threat issues with AI. You have to think about other cyber things that, you know, you tend to normally think about only with humans, but you don't think about that with your software. And so, you know, it's really having that strategy, looking at all parts of your business and making sure that one part isn't lagging behind, or one part's not the only driving force behind it. And so you've got to have a balanced approach. And if one gets a little bit ahead of the other, that's okay, as long as you have mechanisms to pull that back. That's where I've seen these smaller companies really take off and embrace it. They're doing it the right way. That's part of their mission. That's part of their strategic plan. And they're running with it. And they have been so successful. I've been so happy for some of them. You know, that's that dynamic that we're looking for.
So, Dr. Badeau, what's the most dangerous failure mode that you've seen? Is it stale data, silent model drift, over automation, or humans deferring to the machine under pressure?
So the most unsuccessful and the most dangerous is definitely the last one. It's humans that are just turning into the robots. They're the ones that are the fake artificial intelligence, and all they say is, okay, the AI made a decision. I'm going to go with that, and I'm not going to do any research around that. I think we've seen some very big cases, and I say cases for a reason. You know, in 2023, remember, some lawyers thought, oh, we're going to accelerate. We're on vacation, so we're going to accelerate our prep for the judge, and we'll put a packet together, and we'll let ChatGPT do it. Well, ChatGPT did it, and they gave them 5 fake cases. They didn't check them, and they turned them into the judge, and the judge was not thrilled, and they got censored. Now, imagine doing that for drugs manufacturing, for you know, military advisement, for all those other things that are even more critical than that. It's always going to come down to the human.
So the human's role is really key, and that keeps coming up in our conversation.
Absolutely.
AI is a massively powerful tool, and what you're building really turns it into a truly engaging partner. But ultimately, it's the human that's still making the decision.
Exactly. That's the only way that you can have confidence in it. And, you know, we saw early on with some organizations, some of the challenge that they had by rushing to it and then pulling back. The only way you can prevent that is keeping human in there.
So if I'm designing for resilience, so I'm not designing for perfection, I'm designing for resilience, what are the 3 guardrails you implement first? Provenance, monitoring, escalation paths, or perhaps human certification loops?
Well, ours are different. So the first thing that we implement is a constitution. So our agents, every single agent that we have has a constitution. And that tells it what it is allowed to do, but it also tells it what it's not allowed to do. And then based on that constitution that they have, then we really radiate outward. Then we say, okay, these agents can communicate with humans, the other ones can't. These are your redundancy, your playbooks, your interactions, your toolkits that you can use. These other ones are segmented. These are your credentials that you have, and we're going to track you based on your credentials and your characteristics. And then these other ones are different. And so we're looking at a guardrail as more of a guard wall that we have put around the entire set of agents that we deploy, so that they interact the right way, that they behave the right way, that we are restricting them without creating an uncertainty in the large language model calculation. But then even so, around the data, that they're using the data that they're supposed to use, and they're not just creating some of their own data, or in some cases creating their own code just because they decided that they were curious and they were going to go out and do that. And so ours is really an all-encompassing look at how to protect the data, the humans, the decisions, and the interactions so that they all go together.
So I think this is where science fiction folks can really start spinning off down a rabbit hole, right? We start talking about the constitution of the AI agent, what it can do, what it can't do. And you mentioned, you know, drift, but also even an AI agent writing its own code. So where is this real, and what are the real world implications, and what are the parts that are just science fiction silliness?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with ours, it's real. And that's the exciting thing. Our agents can write their own code. Our agents can work and communicate in different ways. And I know it scares some people when I say our agents can use quantum computing. The reality is we have quantum computing relationships with hardware vendors, and they can go out and use the API, calculate something, bring that information back, and then solve a different type of problem than your traditional agents. So that part is all real. Where you start to get a little wishy-washy with certain things is expecting these large language models to be able to do that by themselves. They're not built for that. People are doing a lot of different things with them, but they're fundamentally not built to make decisions and, you know, to drive decisions. And even from a behavioral perspective, they're not fundamentally built to do that. That's why we don't use just large language models. We've got 52 other types of AI that we have pulled into the fold to be able to do that. What is really interesting, though, is that as our agents are more educated, as they continue to learn, I wish I could say that we're going to hit a singularity and they're going to be conscious and they're going to be able to do all those other things that some folks out there are saying that is going to hit in the next 18 months. But, ours are not, they don't have a conscience. They don't have their behaviors are driven by emotions or things like that. It's all math. If you go beyond the math, then that's where science fiction starts to come into play.
When it goes beyond the math. Perfect. Perfect. Thank you so much. In our final segment, we're going to connect the AI future to a physical constraint most people ignore: energy and infrastructure. Because the compute boom doesn't run on optimism, it runs on electrons. I'm Todd Thomas. This is Infinite Future, and we're joined today by Dr. Alan Badeau. We'll be right back. We'll be right back with more conversations at the edge of technology and transformation. Stay tuned. Every week on Infinite Future, we explore breakthrough innovation across every major frontier. We talk to AI architects, biotech pioneers, space entrepreneurs, clean energy disruptors, and the thinkers redesigning global systems. We don't just talk trends. We examine scalability, ethics, economic impact, and real-world implementation. If you're building, investing in, or leading the future, join me on Infinite Future, only on Now Media TV. Because the future isn't predicted, it's engineered. And we're back. I'm Todd Thomas, and this is Infinite Future on Now Media TV. Let's look ahead. If you want more episodes like this, you can watch Now Media TV live or on demand. Download app on Roku, iOS, or check out the podcast at nowmedia.tv. Welcome back to Infinite Future. I want to land this episode in the real world, because most organizations don't fail at AI because models are impossible. They fail because they can't operationalize decisions across teams, data, governance, and accountability fast enough. Your public work highlights enterprise AI strategy across commercial and federal environments. spanning AI, blockchain, quantum, and advanced tech solutions. So I want practical answers. What works, what breaks, and what leaders should measure so AI transformation stops being theater. So Dr. Bedeau, what's the most common AI roadmap illusion that you see? Something leaders believe in Q1 that collapses by Q3 when reality hits.
Yeah, it's that AI can solve every single part of the problem, that it's got the answer. That is the biggest, that's the biggest issue that, I have run into when folks say, well, why can't the AI do that? I used to have hair when folks would, you know, before they would say stuff like that, because they fundamentally really believe that, you know, AI and all of the things that they hear, that it can really solve every single problem. And fundamentally, it can't. And so that's where you have to start to bring in other types of technologies. It's very good at, you know, creating an awareness. It's very good at calculating certain things where you're making some sort of comparison or something like that. But when you have to start to optimize, when you have to start to do logistics types of problems, AI is a ancillary, you know, facilitator to an answer. But you've got to start looking at other things like, you know, like I said, like quantum computing, or, you know, the if there's signal analysis, AI can do a good job with some of that, but you need neuromorphics so that you can actually separate the noise from what you're actually trying to see. And so from that whole concept, when you look at it and you take a step back and you say, you know what, AI is going to be really good at the these things that we are trying to do, then you're going to be successful. You follow the process, you've aligned the AI to what you're trying to do, and then you'll be all right. But if you try to apply it to everything, every single problem, every government situation, every, you know, commercial market, then you're not going to be successful, just because you've missed the point of what these AI algorithms and capabilities are trying to do.
So that actually reminds me of one of the basic tenets that we talk about a lot with startups. So why is one startup successful over another? And often it comes down to start with the problem and build a solution to solve that problem, which is similar to what you're saying right now. Don't just go and build AI to build AI. What's the problem you're trying to solve? And then use the correct AI or the correct set of tools to solve that problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because if you don't, you know, if you don't ask the right questions after you have decided to even move toward an AI capability, then you're going to start to build things that don't align with your customers. You're going to build things that don't solve the right problems. They could be great things, but it's not going to help you as a business owner to try to, you know, sell something and turn your entire organization in a different direction. You've got to be hyper-focused. You've got to use AI the right way. And you've got to remember that if you have to bring in ancillary technologies to help facilitate that, then you do it, because otherwise you're gonna miss opportunities. Your solution's not going to be as robust as it needs to, and you're not going to be successful.
So if a company is looking to deploy AI systems, and let's say they've looked at LLM based, you know, kind of more traditional AI options, and they're looking at minimum viable governance to keep the outputs grounded and auditable. But now they find you and they see your platform and what you're bringing to the table. How does that difference? And how can they have more confidence in your model based around minimum viable governance?
We tell every single customer the same thing. Let's start with a pilot. Let us show you what it can do. We'll do the LLM piece along with it, or you can have other members of your team do something the exact same way, but just use LLMs, and we will compare the results. And I haven't lost one yet. And the reason behind that is, you know, it's all about choosing the right AI for the right problem, like you said earlier. If you don't do that, you're just going to get it wrong. And or you're going to believe what the AI tells you, and you're going to do that, and then you're really going to get it wrong. So, you know, that's what we tell folks, because in some cases we tell customers, we're not the best solution for you. And I have no problem doing that, as long as, you know, we've had a discussion, we've told them what we can do, and we just have that that relationship that says, no, for that problem, you should go use something else, because ours are not going to work as well.
So we talked early on about companies that are deploying AI just for the sake of deploying AI, to be able to say that they are using AI. And I think the rubber hits the road at ROI. Do you have an ROI scoreboard for AI that you use that actually works? Are you looking at cycle time compression, error rate reduction, decision quality lift, risk reduction, or margin impact? And which one do you trust most early?
We do. We have a scoreboard that we watch. We also have human capacity improvement. And that, from our perspective, is the one that we watch earliest. So tell us what the metrics are around how long it takes a human to do it, what's their accuracy, and then let's compare it to the humans that are using the cognitive agents. How fast does it take? What's the accuracy around that? That is the biggest driver for us right now, and you know, and making sure that there's human buy-in and there's that capacity improvement that we're shooting for. We don't believe that, you know, just because the AI is, you know, is accurate or as good as a human, that, oh, that means you can get rid of 10 humans and then use the AI to do that. So ROI is defined a little bit different. Ours is around the value and the capacity improvement. However, there are some baseline things that we do look at, just like everybody else does, around, you know, how long does it take to get to a decision? How accurate is that decision that it is making? Is the human having to go out and redo everything that the AI did because it doesn't have confidence or trust in it? That's another metric that folks aren't looking at, but that human experience and that human, you know, that trustworthiness that is out there is something that's hard to measure. But when you sit back and you say, you know what, Johnny could run 40 the time before, but now with the AI, he's only doing 20 because Johnny's doing twice the work because it's validating the AI, then it actually becomes pretty easy to quantify. And so those are the big things that we're looking at right now, that are really driving either adoption or just these pilots that we have that we're launching with companies to say, you know what, this is what we're going to define as a win, and here you go.
Well, I love to hear the focus on quantification of outcomes of production opposed to merely engagement. I think we've all heard lots of reports of companies that are measuring engagement with the AI agents, and they're not having success. So I'm glad to hear that you're focused on what's the actual human production, what's the increase in capacity that we're seeing as a result. It seems that's the right place to be focused.
Yeah, that's where we've seen the most amount of success.
So before we let you go, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate the conversation today. Where can people follow Dr. Alan Badeau? And is there anything you would particularly like to highlight or call out today?
Well, I think, you know, folks can see me on, you know, AI Today with Dr. Badeau on Wednesdays on Now Media. And, you know, that interaction is fantastic, and it's great with the audience, and they ask questions, and that's wonderful. From the big things that we have rolling out, we have a new platform that we're releasing. It's called Janus Workbench, and that's allowing folks that don't have any experience in building AI to be able to do some very basic, solve some problems that they have, so that, you know, I tell everybody, and they don't believe me, I want to put myself out of a job. You don't have to have a team of AI experts to do certain things that are going to benefit your organization. I don't want to have to do that with everybody. It's not right. I shouldn't have to be or have a team go in and solve some of those things. And so we've created a way that an ordinary user who does not have to have a PhD or a master's in artificial intelligence to be able to rapidly deploy them in their environments. And I always, you know, again, I tell people, I want to do it in 10 clicks or less. If you do it, if it takes longer than that, people are going to lose interest. We're at 11 right now. I'm going to get to 10 and we'll be in great shape.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for the conversation. If you're watching Infinite Future, please join us next week. Thank you for watching Infinite Future. I'm Todd Thomas. Join us next week as we continue exploring the ideas and innovators building what's next, only on Now Media TV.